No, get off the live stream, Ace Undead. Get out of here. Beat it. All right, we are rolling. I have that transition music from the Andy Griffith Show stuck in my head. All right, call the you can call in. It's 317-699-7236. We're going to talk about the drug dealer death penalties. Basically, bad Trump. All the ways bad Trump has popped up. So give us a call. As long as my laptop battery lasts, we will. This thing is, like, I've had it for 4.5 years. Flawless. But the battery's starting to die.
After 4 years, they don't last anymore.
I'm sure that doesn't happen on Lenovo's.
On a PC, you just switch out a graphics card and you're going for another 4.
All right. Here we go, you little turd.
You don't have to buy a whole new Mac.
No, you can buy a new battery.
Oh.
Yeah, you can go to the Apple store. They give you a new battery. You got to buy
it. Is it as much as the Mac?
Probably. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I'm your host, Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content. Too much. I got behind on Loki Wall, so there's like 8 hours of Harry's show in the private RSS feed. So go check that out. There was a full 40 minutes before we actually started the show on Tuesday night, mostly of Harry talking.
Wow.
Because I'm getting ready, trying to get stuff set up, and Harry was talking about tech and all that, but we had a nice back and forth, 40 minutes of extra show. I apologize if that's not tantalizing to you. I totally get it. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. Tonight, we're going to be talking about bad Trump, talking about drug dealer, putting drug dealers to death. We're going to talk about tariffs. We're going to talk about troops deployed to the border and Trump's feud with Amazon. Joining me tonight...
Galt's in the house.
Galt, you beautiful son of a bitch, how are you?
I'm great. I got my buddy Mittens here.
Mittens is
she's my best friend until I touch her, and then she wants to bite me.
Well, just like any woman, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I get it. It's so odd to have you here without your buddy Creighton.
I know.
I'm sad.
Kind of weird. Or Tad.
Or Tad. Yeah, well, Tad was supposed to be here, but he was out with... some filly this past weekend and must have gotten a disease, so he's not feeling too good. But we do have callers.
Hope you feel better, Dad.
I don't. unnecessarily mean. Stupid and mean for no reason. That's my motto. We are...
At least you haven't changed.
No, never. I'll never change. It's too late now. We are taking phone calls for Patreon subscribers only. Patreon subscribers at $10 a month and up get notified that we're watching the live, that we're live on YouTube, and you can go watch the stream, and they can call in at 317-699-7236. And we have a caller. We've been featuring this, when I pull you up on the air, 478. Please state your name and what is your business
that's
here?
Me.
Who? Yeah. Wait.
Hey, Chris, it's Stone.
Would you let
it's
me
Stone.
All right.
Listen. This is going to be rough.
Who is this?
This is Stone.
Oh my God! It's my son Stone. How are you, Stone?
I'm pretty good. I'm out in the backwoods right now. That's why I'm probably not going through too well.
Now, Stone. But, Stone is one of our super fans.
I decided I need to call in because it's been, 3 episodes with call-ins and I haven't.
Now, what would lead you to believe that you should call in?
Super fan status. it's really gone to my head, man. You have no idea how much of an ego you've created.
Yeah.
I don't
walk past people all the time and I'm like, ha, I'm a super fan. What do you do?
He's also very libertarian, if you can't tell.
Yeah.
Stone is a super fan. He is like 21, 22 years old. He went specifically to buy a credit card, one of those reloadable cards, so he could become a Patreon subscriber and get all the goodies. So that's how he achieves super fan status.
Nice.
And he's a janitor, so he's basically, he's like double tithing to We Are Libertarians, aren't you, Stone?
Actually, I'm a meat clerk, too, now, so I have two jobs.
Oh.
That's why I hadn't been on as often.
Wow. Slinging the meat, are you?
Two for one.
How do you like it?
Yep, 16 hours. I said been 16 hours of my weekend with meat at Kroger, so that's fun.
Yeah, that's great. I worked. That was my first job was at Kroger.
Really? Doing what?
I did a little bit of everything except for meat.
You were avoiding the meat,
it's
were you?
Not fun.
I avoided the meat. But you do get a pay raise if you work in meat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You get paid more.
I started at $9.
See?
Which isn't bad.
Yeah, you not only that, but you get trichinosis, too.
$6.85 was what I started at. Before minimum wage was whatever it is now.
How long ago was that, Gulp?
Well,
I don't know. It was like 2008.
Yeah. Long time ago. Can you believe that's a decade ago?
I know.
I think all the time, like, I can't believe 2008 was a decade ago.
I know. It seemed like the year. And now every year seems like that.
It's unbelievable how fast time flies. Mm-hmm. Stone, how old are you?
I'm 20. Not quite 21. I wish, man. I'm ready.
All right. Now, Stone I have adopted as my son because I am 14 years older than he is. I see a lot of myself in him, and I don't want him to make the same mistakes I made. So I've taken Stone under my wing, and I like to give him advice. So, Stone, is there any advice that you'd like to get from Chris Galt and I? Because when you need advice, you need it from Chris Galt and Chris Spangle, who are two very successful, handsome young men. what can I do for you? How can I help you? How can I serve you today, Stone?
That's a very good question. Recently, I've had a problem in my backyard where I have a small pond, and the frogs, they've been turning gay. And I need to know what the solution is to that.
Well, first you need to ask yourself,
something I can buy?
Chris Galt, is there anything
nothing you can do once they're already gay.
Oh. How could it have
genocide?
How could it have been prevented?
Prevention?
Yes.
Water.
Water?
It's all about the water in that pond. It's coming from the government, that pond is.
Okay. Now, if you're putting water into your pond, what kind of water should I buy for my
fluoride
pond?
Fluoride-free water.
Fluoride,
for your fish and your frogs and your body. No fluoride.
Okay. So do I need to tell my cousins that they need to fill their pool with this fluoride-free water as well?
I think if you're a good cousin, you let them just find it out the hard way and then laugh at them for having gay frogs, never admitting that you, too, have gay frogs.
Yeah, don't ever tell anyone.
All right.
Wow, did they catch it from you is what I would say as I point and laugh.
We just put it up. Isn't this a national show here? And I just put it on air. Thank you for that, Chris.
Well, nobody's listening. Don't worry.
Now everybody knows that I have... Everyone knows that I have gay frogs now.
All right, my boy.
Good luck with your gay frog problem.
All right, and listen, embrace the gay frogs. Enjoy those gay frogs.
There's nothing you can do now.
Have them come into your house. Have them teach you to cook. Have them teach you to dress.
Yeah. They've got great fashion advice.
Yep.
I'm just going to stay inside.
Layers and
from
hats.
From now on. And
all right, bye, Stone.
It's Georgia. I can't dress in layers. All right.
Thanks, Stone.
See you around.
See, that was very subtle what he just said that you might not have catched. The new Queer Eye is in Georgia, and he's like, they always say dress in layers. He's like, I'm in Georgia. I can't dress in layers. Oh, Stone. All right. Let's get to business. Enough fun.
We've had
enough fun.
That
on
was
this
a lot.
That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun here on Sweaty Balls.
Man. So Trump's been a bad boy.
So Ben Shapiro has, and it's not groundbreaking radio, this, but he has a little segment he calls Good Trump, Bad Trump. And he basically takes all the things that Trump does that are good and all the things that Trump does are bad, and says, okay, this is bad Trump. And you, around the last time you were on, I mean, we were all, and you're a Trump fan.
I was probably his biggest proponent on here.
Easily, yeah. Well, second.
Yeah.
But the December Trump, I liked.
Yeah, I called him the most libertarian president we've had.
Sure did.
Yeah, I did.
Oops. I'm just going to read some things for the next hour and a half, and let's see how you feel about that at the end of this episode. I specifically wanted you and Tad to be here because you two are pro-Trump.
Yeah.
And I wanted you to, not necessarily to defend, but just to sit here and listen to bad Trump.
No, I need 2017 Trump back.
Yeah. So I think a lot of it is Trump has lost a lot of his security blankets. I mean, he's lost Hope Hicks. Mm-hmm. I was saying on a show a couple weeks ago, if you go back and you read the Fire and Fury book, so early February, I'm traveling to Students for Liberty, and I was like 75% done with the book, so I was like, I'm going to just finish this up on the trip out there. I'm going to D.C. I might as well read a D.C. book. And none of the people in that book work there anymore, except for Jared Kushner. Wow. It's a completely irrelevant book. Like, this was the hot book that we were all talking about in January, and none of it is relevant anymore because none of those people work there anymore.
No, nope.
And
it's what Trump's known for: fire, fire, fire. You know, if they're not doing what he needs them to do, he just cuts them,
but
replaces them with a new team, and it. But it might not be. It could be a team that he equally can't trust, just like the last.
Yeah, he's like, I'm finally getting my team in place. It's like,
we're going to be on our third FBI director, right?
Who picked the team in the first place?
Yeah. And he picked the last one, so.
Yeah. he's a hot mess, and like he just keeps, it's finally, people have finally figured out his rhythms. You listen to all these talk shows, and they're like, listen, I know he said this about Amazon, but that doesn't mean anything. Right. He could be praising Jeff Bezos next week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's. You know, yes, he says he's going to impose these tariffs, but he may not actually do it.
Right.
He says one thing and does another. He says he might put troops on the border, but he might not do it.
When an issue strikes fire under Trump, he gets overly obsessive about it.
Right.
Like, to where every morning he gets up, that's the only thing he can think about is Amazon, so he has to send a nasty tweet, because that's all he can think about.
A lot of it, and they have done, a lot of reporters have done studies where they watch Fox and Friends in the morning, and then they just compare what the segment was about with the Trump tweet, and it always matches up.
Really?
And the reporters who track this stuff can tell what TV show he's watching in the morning by what he's tweeting out.
Wow.
And I do this, like when I'm prepping mm-hmm. for the show, I'm reading stuff, tweeting stuff out, going, you know, I want to tweet, I'm angry about this, I'm going to tweet this. And I'm trying to do less of that because I think the clip that we played a couple episodes ago with Ta-Nehisi Coates where he's saying, is this good for me? Like, part of growing up is realizing what's not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to be more thoughtful in what I put out in the world. And so I'm trying to, you know, I was like, that's a good idea. I should probably do that. People can listen to me here. They don't need to read my Twitter or Facebook. I'm done posting politics on Facebook totally, but on my personal,
yeah.
I mean, I
keep it like, all separate.
What's the point?
You have 10,000 followers that all are following you for one reason.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
Hear your political commentary.
It doesn't change any minds.
No.
Like
you have a cult of personality.
Well, then they can go to wearelibertarians.com or walpolitics.com and find the information there. Because, or
just done like, with the Facebook medium.
I'm still posting in the group and I'm still posting on the Facebook page. But like my personal Facebook, people don't care. It doesn't change any minds. It just makes people crazy. It makes me crazy, and it causes unnecessary stress. Like, why? What's the point?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same five trolls that get on there, like John Ulrich, who just gets on there and trolls somebody, and then they get mad, and then they're in my private messages going, what's wrong with your friend?
Yeah, like, I posted something about how open borders are stupid, and I don't understand why everybody's flaming me.
Right. Well, see, we got this guy in the our Facebook group, which you can join at wearelibertarians.com. We got a multitude of Facebook groups. Go to our Facebook page, and you can see the whole listing there, but... John is like 39, maybe 38. So he's not a boomer, but he sure does act like one.
I mean, he went to IUPUI around the time I was. He was late to the party.
And he was a male cheerleader.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but his reasoning was spot on, because go look at his wife. He's like, I'm the only guy that is around these women most of the time. And he ended up marrying one. So... Stone.
Biggest mistake of my life.
Stone, be a male cheerleader.
It's not too late.
It's not too late.
You're only 20.
Your frogs can teach you.
Yeah.
So nothing is more acrobatic than a gay frog.
Absolutely.
No doubt. So, you know, John is a boomer, a conservative boomer who just gets in the Facebook group and like, Russell, Russell, Russell. And then on the opposite, there's some like Bissell guy who's a lefty who's always rustling. Reinhold gets in there and he's like,
Reinhold.
So it is a good time. It's all in fun. Nobody ever seems to get mad. And we like our boomer John.
We have a few of them. They're really, yeah. The ones we have at least aren't too bad to talk to.
We like our boomers.
We like debating them. Mm-hmm. And they'll come around. Hopefully.
Will they?
No. Like you said, nobody changes their mind on there anyway.
No, I think, and studies, study after study shows that like posting articles on Facebook changes nobody's mind. And that's why I'm a big believer in the podcast, because we create, and I think, and if you have a story like this, I'd love to read it on air. So email me at editor@wearelibertarians.com. I see so many great letters from people who write into the podcast going, you know, I was curious about libertarianism. I was curious about libertarian politics. I didn't know much about it, but I've listened to the show for a couple years, and you guys have changed my thoughts on this, or I have become a libertarian, or I think this way. Like, I was talking to somebody who is part of the Mises Caucus, and they're like, you know, I was really into this, but the more I listen to you, I go, we're not actually winning friends and influencing people in the way that we're messaging. We need to kind of change the way we message. You know, this is, and I hope they do. I'd love for the Mises Caucus to be more effective and less flame war.
Mm-hmm.
And so definitely. That's the kind of stuff that We Are Libertarians is able to do because we're passive. That's the power of podcasting. We can create more libertarians because you have the ability to think about what we're saying and process it and judge for yourself, as opposed to, because, you know, you're mowing the lawn, you're driving your car, you're cooking dinner. And so your brain isn't engaged in that linear thinking. It's in passive mode. And so you can kind of process stuff a different way, as opposed to when you're on Facebook, you're like, this guy's wrong and I've got to prove him wrong. And you're just like a dog with a bone.
So you get those letters all the time about the podcast, about people changing their minds
I would
and
say
becoming
two,
libertarian.
2 to 3 a month.
And you don't ever get that on Facebook? Nobody ever messages you and says...
No, I get it on Facebook Messenger.
About
I get
the podcast.
About the podcast.
But never about anything you post on Facebook.
Never. I get, it's really funny. I love the stuff you post. They like the irreverent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They love the meme stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stuff that... so brilliantly was done by Greg and Aaron and Tad specifically a couple of years ago. That's the stuff people like on Facebook.
Hmm.
But that's not necessarily changing minds. That's shitposting for fun.
Yeah.
You know.
So that's what most of Facebook is now.
Exactly. Shitposting for fun.
Because it's you brought it up, and that's the reason they're bringing Zuckerberg in front of Congress here soon, is because they see Facebook now as the largest media company in the world.
Yeah.
Because Russians influenced our election through them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're going to be grilling Zuckerberg hard about media and about you know.
Keep talking. I wonder if I can find this clip. Go ahead.
It's just, you're saying that, you know, your show is getting all this response, but Facebook's not. But Facebook's the one that's in front of Congress, you know? Like, they're the ones being scrutinized, and they're probably going to be regulated, and they're really not having the influence that the numbers show, right?
Yeah.
Billions of people use it, but it doesn't have the influence that it could have.
That it used to.
Or that it used
to. I can tell you that for sure. Like, you used to see hundreds mm-hmm. of people hitting your website referred by Facebook a day, and you know, and We Are Libertarians, we used to get so much traffic from Facebook, and we, even if we direct post to the website, to Facebook, we don't get nearly as much. Like, let me see.
Facebook's they punish you if you use outside links and things like that.
Yeah.
They want you to stay in their ecosystem.
So I can show you who was our top referrer for the day. Because I did post a couple things on the website that auto-post to Facebook. We have 87,000 Facebook likes. you know, which is not insignificant.
Right.
But the number one referrer is always Google now, not Facebook. And that's partly because
people find your Facebook posts more on Google than they find them on Facebook.
Yes. So 57 people. So we've had 117 views today. 57 of those came from search engines. 11 came from Facebook. And then the rest were, you know, one from Twitter, one from humblelibertarian.com. So you know, yesterday it was 56 search engines, 7 Facebook. So,
wow.
Yeah. And those are 2 days that I posted articles to the Facebook page of 87,000 people and said, hey, go back to our website and read this thing or watch this thing.
And way more people found it just by searching it.
Just by searching it, yep.
Wow. Organic.
Mm-hmm. Because of they
There's
search.
Something seriously wrong with Facebook.
Well, we, like today, we got 26 hits, my top 10 libertarian podcasts. So I've put up stuff about, you know, what are the top libertarian podcasts and websites and stuff like that. Some SEO stuff, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're found. We're found by people searching for libertarian podcasts. So, yeah, no, I think there is something wrong. That's why Rare just went out of business. There's several of these clickbaity sites that are going out of business because they're not getting traffic.
But Facebook will always have that traffic.
Well, Facebook has the eyeballs, but Facebook has a vested interest in not getting you out of the Facebook ecosystem.
Right.
Each one of these sites have this. They don't want to be Reddit, you know.
Yeah, they don't want to be a redirect.
They want to be the
Google doesn't want to send you to Facebook. They want you to post that same thing on Google Plus.
It's why you get so many damn notifications about Michael, how did you find us? I'd like to hear. He said that's how I found you guys. But for the first time in a long time, Google is now back on top in terms of top referral to a website over Facebook. And it used to be tons of organic traffic.
So there was a time when Facebook gave you more traffic.
Oh, it was 60%.
Wow.
And Google would be 35% and then 5% Twitter. And then everything else would be negligible.
What kind of questions would you like them to ask, Congress to ask Zuckerberg about this and Facebook and being as that you're a page owner and a community driver, what do you want them to?
Well, I think he really needs to figure out if he's a publisher or if he's a platform, because there's a big difference. You know, there is, I am a publisher. I'm a person who has built a website and platforms so I can curate content and talk about my opinion. And I pick up people like you and say, hey, give your opinion on this stuff.
Yep, and you just pump information out.
Pump information
publish,
out.
Publish, publish, publish.
Right, and so there's an editorial purpose to that. But
right.
And I think what Zuckerberg has always wanted to be is a platform where if I built WeAreLibertarians.com to be a forum, and it doesn't matter what you guys say or do, I'm just building the infrastructure.
Right.
Like Reddit doesn't have like any kind of editorial control over what goes on except for banning entire subreddits.
Right.
And so they're just pure platform. 4chan, pure platform. Like that, there's almost, there's community
mods.
No
one's responsible for anything that's on there.
Right. There's barely any, I don't even know if somebody owns 4chan or what. Like, it's just anarchy.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, so, there's some, Facebook has crept into somewhere in between, and I think what Congress wants, and what politicians want, because they have a vested interest in controlling what content is seen and basically controlling thought, as any government does, they want Zuckerberg to be more of a publisher. Because once he starts being a publisher, he's now held accountable for what's on his website. And the more accountable he is, the more they can beat him down, regulate him, control what he does, and diminish his power.
And punish him.
And he's going to give in to it, and he's going to give them whatever they want, because it's in his interest to be regulated, because then that cements his place on top.
Yep.
And so there comes a point in these major companies, and it happened with the quote-unquote robber barons in that age, where these companies are radically innovative, and they create new markets, and they create new industries, and then they get so big that politicians start picking on them, and then they just basically write the regulations and they, you know what, you're right. Let me help you write that. Yep.
Then get in bed with the government.
Yep.
Because that'll solidify them for longer in history.
Right. And if you think Facebook is going to, like, if let's say Mark Zuckerberg and I sat down and we had a conversation and then he had a conversation with Lindsey Graham, do you think that he's going to take what I say with more weight, a person who is an active member of Facebook's community for over 17 years? I mean, the second it came to IAPUI, 2004, 2005, I jumped on it. I don't know if that's 17 years, but I can't do math. I'm a person who has built businesses using his tool. I have promoted his tool. I have spent millions of dollars, literally, in terms of free advertising to get people to his product. Versus Lindsey Graham, who's a congressman who probably doesn't have an account that he's ever logged into. But he's going to sit there and take what Lindsey Graham says with more weight because Lindsey Graham has the force of government behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the I have to get 2 billion of my friends to put him out of business.
Right.
Lindsey Graham can have it done in a period of 2 years through manipulating media and propagandizing the company and lifting out, you know, obscure little things and saying, see, this is the problem. You know, like this Russian thing is not that big of a deal.
Right.
You're talking about Hillary Clinton spent $2 billion and Russian trolls spent $100,000 and Hillary Clinton lost. And
we're still spending money on it.
Right. Like it's not that big of a deal, but it is a great way to propagandize against the company. And the media is willingly complicit in it because Facebook stole their revenue. They have taken away our power to be the thought leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want Chris Galt being a thought leader. The Channel 9 News should be the thought leader because we're journalists and we should have licensed journalists. Michael says, I was looking for different podcasts since most of the conservative talk shows were blinded by the Trump bandwagon, and I wanted a different perspective, so I Googled libertarian podcasts, and that's how Stone found us, too. So
nice.
So that's why I wrote, like, my top 10 libertarian podcasts.
They Googled Chris Galt
and
podcast, yeah, and that's how they found it.
So let's get on to Bad Trump. Oh, Bad Trump.
Yeah.
And you can call in if you're a Patreon subscriber, if you want to get in on it, 317-699. Yes, I chose 69 for a reason. 317-699-7236. Put that in your cell phone. So on Tuesday nights, we have call-ins for everybody. If you're a Patreon subscriber watching on the live feed, then you can call in on Thursdays as well when we're live. So we're going to do this kind of chronologically. We're going to go way back in the Wayback Machine to March 20th. I mean, do you remember when Donald Trump was talking about killing drug dealers 2 weeks ago? No, you can't because it's been so long in terms of Trump world.
You can't even remember it.
There's literally like five other major things that have erupted around Trump land.
Remember that time way back when?
Oh, yeah. Like, the show is so dated now. Like, it used to, if you go back and you listen to 2012, 2013, those shows, I mean, while there's some dated stuff, there's still some relevant stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, and we're applying
principles.
Right.
And, yeah.
But, like, now it is every, we have to do, I could do 4 shows a week. I could do 5 shows
just
a week.
Just to stay on top of
it. Just to stay
all.
On top of it, to talk about all the stuff I want to talk about. But that's why the shows are so long. Like, there's too much to talk about.
So one thing we missed was this, was Trump saying that he wants the death penalty for all the drug dealers.
Yes, all the drug dealers are getting the death penalty.
If you deal drugs, you die.
You deal drugs, you die. So in a speech on March 19th, he called for the execution of some drug traffickers, but to actually start doing that, he'd either need Congress to change the law or would have to reinterpret it on his own. Now, this is from the Washington Post. In an analysis, Trump talked tough on drugs, but applying the death penalty to traffickers is even tougher. So he was in New Hampshire, where the drug problem is a huge issue, and also New Hampshire is the second state in the primary system. So it was during the elections, New Hampshire was ground zero. All the candidates went there to talk about opioids because it has such a big problem. So the the plan by Donald Trump is basically to get tough on crime and to treat drugs and opioids like it's a crime. Well, Galt, we've done that for 40 years. How's that worked out?
Well,
we are in the middle of the worst drug crisis in the history of the nation. There are more people dying of heroin overdoses than there are of traffic accidents at this point.
And it's been compounding and compounding and compounding for years and years and years now.
Yeah, and one of the problems is, you know, naproxone and some of these Suboxone and some of these other drugs that will, Narcan, where if somebody ODs, you hit them with it and they come back to life, kind of like in the Pulp Fiction, you know, it's not as dramatic as stabbing them Uma Thurman in the heart, but that's actually kind of exacerbated the problem because a lot of users will go, I can risk it because we got some naproxone here.
Yeah.
We've got some Narcan.
I might not die.
My town has, you know, I've been saved five times by EMTs with Narcan. What do I have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
And so people are actually becoming riskier in their usage habits, which so is sad.
Do you think we stop helping them?
No. No. I mean, that's...
They have to help them, right?
Absolutely. I think human empathy, first and foremost, seeing another human being dying and you do nothing, no, that's not how it works. Although there are some Indiana lawmakers who are trying to keep Indiana schools from purchasing Narcan. Like, why would you want to, well, we just don't want that kind of drug use in our school. Hey, dude, it's already there.
Yeah.
So this is the Christian conservatives in rural Indiana are insane. And Mike Pence is their champion. I want you to know that.
Let's regulate the only way to save these people.
Right. And I think if you're an EMT, there's no way you're not going to go stab somebody with the pen.
You're going to do it.
Right. So you see, now when I go to take a drink, I need you to keep talking for me. So
I don't know. I don't know about I think if you want to give the death penalty to some drug dealers, give it to the big ones, right? Put Eli Lilly and Pfizer up there.
I see what you did there.
You know,
I like
it's the pharmaceutical drugs that are ruining everything.
I like it. Are you for the death penalty?
No.
Okay, why not?
Because you believe in if you're a libertarian, it's no force.
Right.
So, I mean, that's the ultimate force is ending a life. So the government shouldn't have the power to end a life.
I was always wishy-washy on the question. And then when I became a libertarian 12 years ago, I was like, oh, the scales fall off your eyes and you just see government in a completely different way when you become a libertarian.
Yeah.
And I just think it's hard to be a libertarian and pro-death penalty because your life as a libertarian is just compiling all the ways that the government fucks up.
Yeah. And how many people that are in there that are wrongly accused of what they did.
Yeah, you look at Dallas, Texas, they're going back through all of the cases in Dallas, Texas, and all these, I think it's like 80, 90 people have been, they found 80 or 90 people were wrongly convicted after they ran the DNA test. Some of those people were put to death.
Yeah.
So I just don't I don't trust the criminal justice system enough.
Right.
I lived through the OJ trial. Like, I was old enough to watch it.
Wow.
And justice wasn't served, especially if you saw the OJ confession on Fox a couple weeks ago. That dude did it.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. That's the reason I can't support the death penalty.
Right.
Because I get the arguments for it as, you know, paying for someone that's done something heinous.
Right.
You know, you're paying more taxpayer dollars because you're supporting their life when they don't deserve to die.
Right.
Or eye for an eye argument. You know, if you killed somebody, you should die too.
The other part is it costs more because of the appeals.
Yeah.
So there's no economic benefit to putting someone to death after 12 years.
Right.
As opposed to leaving them in jail for life.
Right.
So
that's the main reasons I can't be for it.
Yeah.
Just based off principle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe in a fully private society, I could see a place for it.
Okay. So this is where this, listen, this is where my own people let me down. It's like, you know, I think a government putting people to death is totally wrong. But if I pay AAA a fee and I signed the agreement, then they have the right to put my mom to death. I mean, that's just how it is. You have, what about personal responsibility? I mean, I signed the form, so they get to kill me.
Well, that's what you do now. You sign the social contract that lets the government kill you when you do that.
Yeah, and we're all bitching about it. Yeah. But yet, if it's AAA, we're fine with it.
It would be... It's voluntary. You don't have a choice. You're signed into the social contract when you're born. You're given a number, and that's what you are.
No, but if you're against the death penalty...
If AAA, they're like, hey, would you like to do this for $100 a month? I'm like, no. Nah. Go, I'm good. I'll kill myself.
But the but the principle is the same. It's a group of people deciding whether or not you live or die.
That's not the problem. The problem is there's no option. There's no choice.
Okay,
there's
no
freedom of choice.
Well,
there.
what if you join this voluntary group, and listen, we don't believe in DNA testing.
Okay.
I mean, and you're put to death. What if you're wrongly accused?
Well, I joined the group.
Well, what if you're a great, outstanding member of society and you're wrongly accused?
What do you mean? I'd get a lawyer.
How could a private organization ever make a mistake? In Kapistan, there would be no mistakes in Kapistan. No group of people, no matter how small or large in the private organization, would ever make a mistake. Fucking moron.
No.
Galt, I love you, but that's...
What?
You believe that a private institution...
Yes, I believe that if without government, and I live in a community called Mars Hill, and we all sign an agreement that says when you murder someone, the community kills you in response to your murder. Yes.
But how?
What is wrong with that?
But how do you know that they actually murdered someone?
We're talking in a really hypothetical world. I don't know how the system's set up.
You're O'Charlie's.
Do we still have some government or no government?
You're O'Charlie's. Police department powered by
Uber. If we have
Uber.
Some government, we have courts. Okay. So then you would go through your regular trials and you would still have your rights from the Constitution.
All right. Well.
There's no government.
I don't totally disagree, but I also, like, to me, the idea is that if 6 million people in Indiana say, if we don't believe that the 6 million people that live in Indiana shouldn't be able to put you to death, then the million people in Indianapolis, just because it's a voluntary place to live, it doesn't make the ethical problem of a group of people putting you to death. It doesn't. No, it doesn't erase that.
It does.
It doesn't. It just doesn't erase
it does.
That.
You have
problem.
A choice. You okay. don't have a choice now. You would have a choice then.
Okay. So
there's your difference. I mean,
I would not live in your pro murder.
Good. I bet. You would move to a city nearby that didn't have those same rules.
All right.
That's the beauty
of Ankafistan.
Yes.
God, you look
so... You said that word, not me.
You. I didn't get enough appreciation for the O'Charlie's Police Department powered by Uber.
What?
Well, I had to go down to the Simon & Schuster courthouse and... all right, so... So if you're against the force of government putting you to death, even if you're for the putting to death in your Ankafistan paradise.
I wouldn't probably still live in that city.
That's
that
right.
That.
Well, that's
but
what I'm saying.
I'm just saying the choice should be there. If there were a million people that wanted the death penalty, they should be able to live together and have a death penalty.
if you want to call in and settle this argument, 317-699-7236. Who's right, Galt or myself? I think this is why I love Galt. He comes up with some crazy stuff and we get to argue about it. So Trump delivered a speech where he was talking about drugs and he was basically saying, hey, we have to get tough on these people. We can have all the blue ribbon committees we want, but if we don't get tough on drug dealers, we're wasting our time. And that toughness includes the death penalty. The Washington Post, in an analysis, writes... Drug crimes are included in the sweeping law expanding capital punishment dubbed the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act that Congress passed and President Bill Clinton signed in 1994, the crime bill. But the law says that for traffickers to be executed, they must have also been involved in a murder. I'd say, like, listen, I'm okay if people kill people, but, like, chomos, like Subway Jared... I'm all for putting them to death. What about you? Yeah, like if you have to have the death penalty.
Oh, if I have to have the death penalty.
Gun to
government
your head,
death penalty.
There has to, what crime?
Yeah, child molestation.
Yeah, like to me that's
or the, trafficking. Child yeah. trafficking.
Like those things have such far-reaching generational
mm-hmm.
problems that yeah. Subway Jared, I'd probably even put rape in there. Like Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Bill Clinton. Well, Bill Clinton, yeah. I meant Bill Cosby, but it works.
Yeah, bills.
Never trust a bill.
Never trust a bill.
Let's be clear. No one in the U.S. seems to have been executed under the statute. Clinton, Bush, and Obama never pursued this particular statute. So if the Trump administration decides to head in this direction, it
so
would be a big
deal.
So
it's an already written rule.
It is. It's already written that drug traffickers can be executed.
Okay. If they commit murder.
If they commit murder in the
And basically
execution.
None of the previous administrations had ever enforced that rule.
Right. So Jeff Sessions says, we will continue to aggressively prosecute drug traffickers and we will use federal law to okay. seek the death penalty wherever appropriate. But it would be even bigger if the Justice Department, they said huge or deal if the Justice, but I hate when like the Washington Post puts huge in.
Huge.
Stop it. It's more annoying than adulting. I'm adulting today. I don't want to. Oh, stop saying adulting. I hate the bastardization of English, the English language. Like, I can barely speak it, but at least I appreciate it. If they started seeking the death penalty for such widespread crimes as drug trafficking, and for that, the administration would either need lawmakers to revise the 94 law governing capital punishment or redefine it much more expansively. For example, the DOJ could try to reinterpret the statute to include distributing drugs with the intent to kill the user or argue that a major drug dealer is liable for any deaths that occur when someone uses a drug that's sold by them. Columbia Law Professor Jeffrey Fagan says, of course, that could be a legally dangerous move, challenging longstanding precedent on when it's appropriate to seek the death penalty. So, like, so much with...
I think it's good you cleared all that up.
Yeah, because like so much of what Trump says is rhetoric to get headlines, mm-hmm. but when you look at the actual law, that's
it's
where
murdering drug dealers.
It's right.
It's drug dealers that kill people. They have to have killed someone and be convicted of murder.
Which, if you're at the height of the drug trade, like El Chapo, you're yeah. definitely going to have murders pinned on you.
And you probably deserve the death penalty.
I guess. How many El Chapos are there out there where they can't pin the actual crime on the individual? Like you couldn't mm-hmm. like Pablo Escobar was so reckless that he didn't care. But right. like Al Capone went to jail for tax evasion, not murder.
Mm-hmm.
You knew he murdered people,
mm-hmm.
but it was never tied back to him. Michael Bocelli, former drug czar under Obama, said recent history shows the approach stressed by Trump doesn't work. A significant emphasis of the president's speech and president's plan was on supply reduction and law enforcement, including enhanced criminal penalties and even the death penalty. I think we have known throughout the recent history of the U.S. that hasn't solved any of our drug problems here in the U.S. How do we think that immediately expanding access to treatment might work? And he's totally right. Like, if you, and I will put it in the show notes at WeAreLibertarians.com, Nicholas Kristof in the New York Times wrote an article called How to Win the War on Drugs, and they had an opioid epidemic that was as bad as ours, maybe not as bad, but they legalized all drugs and went to more of a care-first mm-hmm. solution, and it immediately dropped heroin deaths and overdoses dramatically.
Yeah.
And Portugal and Chile, these are countries that have done the same thing, and... It was in Portugal that this took place. I'm sorry. And they solved their drug problem by legalization as opposed to more stiffer penalties. Like mm-hmm. a drug dealer knows he's going to go to jail or get killed. He lives with the prospect of death every day. Like they don't care about the death penalty. Like the idea of the death penalty does not scare someone like an Osama bin Laden no. or... an El Chapo or right. Pablo Escobar. They have lived with death and the prospect of being killed every moment of their entire lives. So do you think Avon Barksdale really gave a shit about the federal government killing him? He didn't care.
No. So punishment only goes so far. You know, like you have a kid And all you do is tell every time that kid does something wrong, you tell him over and over that he's wrong, and you punish him and you ground him or you spank him or whatever you do. He's just going to go to class or school and take it out on the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to exert that back out instead of saying, here's what you did wrong. Here's what we can do better. Here, let me help you get through this tough part in your life or this struggle or this problem you're having. And that's the difference of approach, I think, with the war on drugs is for 40 years now, all we've done is punish and tell them they're bad people and put them over and over again in the same places.
Mm-hmm.
And all it has done is made more and more of them.
Right.
Instead, let's go at it the opposite way. Let's go at it to help people. To help people get over those problems, those addictions. Because a lot of people that are addicted to drugs don't want to be addicted.
Right.
They really do want help. It's really hard to get that kind of help because you can't talk about it.
Right.
If you did meth, Chris Spangle, if you did meth and you needed help getting off meth, who could you tell? Who could you tell that you did meth?
Audience, I have something
you couldn't
need to
tell
say.
Your audience. You couldn't ask your audience for help.
Right.
You'd be, you know, tomorrow, Chris Spangle does meth. Needs help. He's addicted.
Right.
Like, it'd be terrible.
Libertarian podcaster, a drug addict. Yeah, I don't think that's
breaking
news. It
would be really
news.
Bad.
I don't think that's breaking news.
Well, it wouldn't be good.
Right.
The point is that it's hard to get help for those things, and that's what we need to expand. We need to expand the places and the ways people can get help, not expanding the punishments.
Yeah, I totally agree. But there's still a resistance to that, even though it is the humane. Thank you, Stone. Stone says I can call him if I need help getting off of meth. See, that's why I like Stone. He's helpful.
Write that down in your notebook.
I'm going to call the 20-year-old Stone, who is very well equipped to deal with my problem, I'm sure. Hold on, let me ask my dad. I have this friend, he's 34 and he's addicted to meth. Can you help me, Dad? Give me your phone, you're grounded. But I'm 20, I don't care.
You shouldn't be talking to those people, son. You're not a super fan anymore.
Curtis Hill, Indiana AG Rick says, I absolutely believe in getting addicts into treatment programs, and I believe the best way to get them into the programs is to put them in prison.
Hmm.
Curtis Hill is trying to run for governor of Indiana. That's why he's tough on crime, trying to get all those boomers. But I talked to a guy, a neighbor of mine. You know, he found out that I do this, and he's like, you know, I don't want my money going to pay for treatment. Like, those people got themselves hooked on drugs. They like, I'll pay to put them in prison, but I'm not going to pay to give them treatment.
Right.
And I just said, but you're paying to not solve the problem. You're spending way more money
mm-hmm.
putting them into prison repeatedly as a... I wish I could say what Stone just said, but I don't want to get him in trouble. But I said, you're spending so much more money if you send them to treatment three times. Instead of prison eight times for most of their life, mm-hmm. you're saving so much more money.
Yep.
I don't want to do it. I don't believe
that was
in it.
One of
okay.
The,
All yeah. right.
That was one of the best issues I saw Rupert champion when he was running for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Is he? Nobody was talking about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what he did.
Yeah.
That's what he did was he took kids and people out of those systems and fixed them.
Yeah, we've done a
And there were so many success stories. I read his book. That's a real issue.
Yeah,
is helping people like that.
And Rupert has done a couple episodes. If you go back in the feed and listen to those, we talk about criminal justice rehabilitation and what it's like for people getting out of the system. And Rupert from Survivor ran for governor in 2012. And, you know, I never really thought about it, but he's like, you put one of the biggest problems is the ankle bracelet, the monitoring bracelet. Because you slap them with a $150 a week charge for that bracelet, and a kid who is a lower income, poverty stricken situation, they're going to have to ask their family for the money, and they probably don't have it. And so to make that money or go back to prison, they just start doing exactly what they used to do, which was breaking and entering or selling drugs. So then they get sent back to prison. They start to give up and just go, listen, this is my life now. I better become a better criminal. Thank God I'm in prison and surrounded by better criminals who can teach me the art of being a better criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you end up with just this revolving door of people going to prison, and you end up with the largest, we're 25, what is it? It's not 25% of our population's locked up, but it's like, What is it? We're like 25. There's some.
It's the most in the world.
It's the most in the developed world. Let's put it that way. But it's like 25% of the developed world we warehouse. Like, it's crazy how much money we spend on it.
I can't believe Curtis Hill thinks that.
Yeah.
Sending them to prison is the way to help them, because it's not.
No.
It's the way to keep ensure that they keep doing the same thing, making the same mistakes.
Politicians like Curtis Hill, who's probably 40, 45, who wants to have a career in Republican politics, not that this... So, like, Curtis is trying to run for governor. And so he's trying to get in with all the baby boomer Republicans, mm-hmm. because that's most of the base.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got all of these... So, I just got completely thrown off. I have to turn off the chat.
Sometimes the chat gets distracting, huh?
Of course it does. Yes. All right. Let's move on.
Yeah, what's next?
What do you
Amazon?
Wanna... Well, let's see here. No, let's do tariffs.
All right.
Yeah. Because we just got a notification... $100 billion in tariffs on Chinese goods. The New York Times says Trump is going to double down and add $100 billion more in tariffs.
Mm, fun.
Nice.
All right. Tariffs. It's a synonym and another word for taxes.
Right, exactly.
When
its
company is taxed, who pays for those taxes?
So the Trump administration placed a 25% tariff on Chinese products.
So 25% tax on Chinese products.
Like flat screen televisions, medical devices, aircraft parts and batteries, outlining more than 1,300 imported goods that will soon face levies as part of a sweeping trade measure aimed at penalizing China for its trade practices.
Hmm.
On Monday, China said it would slap tariffs on 128 American products in response to a separate White House plan to tax steel and aluminum from China and other countries. The products targeted by the White House are part of its plan to go after China's dominance in cutting-edge technologies like semiconductors, electric vehicles, and advanced medical products, industries that China is pursuing dominance in as part of its Made in China 2025. The tariffs will be imposed on a total of $50 billion worth of Chinese products each year. So that's $50 billion worth of new taxes.
Yeah.
The Trump administration is placing on both Chinese makers and American taxpayers. So the Chinese are not happy. The Chinese responded by putting tariffs 25% on imports of 128 American-made products, including pork and seamless steel pipes. The Ministry of Commerce said that it could impose tariffs in two stages. First, a 15% duty on 120 products, including fruit and wine. And then after assessing the impact of the United States tariffs, a 25% tariff on eight other products. They said, screw it, we're doing it all, including the 25% charge on pork, which disproportionately hurts American farmers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is...
There are only two things getting hurt in both of these scenarios. The American consumer and the Chinese consumer.
That's exactly right.
Those are the two people getting hurt.
Right. Eric Boehm at Reason writes, trade barriers that Trump issued to prop up steel and aluminum industries, which he also included. This was a separate tariff that happened a few weeks ago where he placed tariffs on steel and aluminum, but exempted Canada and Mexico because that's where we get most of our steel from. So he wanted to look tough while not actually doing much. To prop up steel and aluminum industries will end up increasing costs for thousands of downstream businesses. That's not going to hit you. Like when you go and buy stuff at Walmart and it says made in China, it's a piece of plastic. That's not where it's going to hit you. By one count, there are 46 American jobs in steel consuming industries for every one steel producing job in the country. Other tariffs aimed at Chinese goods will likely have less of a direct effect on the economy as a whole, analysts say, but will leave Americans with fewer options and higher prices. You know, the United States exported $1.1 billion in pork to China.
That's a lot.
And we export to them apples, oranges, watermelons, strawberries, raspberries, cranberries, cherries, grapes, and pineapples. And we're going to tax that at 25%.
Wow.
So
then everyone in China gets to pay more for all their fruit.
Right, and he notes that this is a double blow to American farmers who are already facing higher prices for farm machinery and equipment thanks to Trump's steel tariffs on aluminum.
Because only half of what we import is used by people like us, people like consumers.
Right.
The other half is used by companies and corporations that produce new equipment for people here or people there. They're made by manufacturers in America, and they use that steel. So now all their products are now more expensive.
Right.
Because people still, the farmers still need the same amount of tractors no matter how much it costs.
Do you have any idea how expensive a tractor is?
No, but it's expensive.
It's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of money that farmers make is not a lot. I mean, some can do pretty well. But I have a family member who farms on 40-year-old equipment, and they just keep fixing it up because the expense for a new combine or a new tractor is outrageous. Like, you can't afford it. So this is just going to make that even more out of reach for American farmers who are already, you know, under pressure.
Yeah, because the tax doesn't change the demand. The demand stays the same.
Right.
The same amount of people want the same amount of products.
The reality of this is this and the immigration stuff is all boiled down to Trump's idea that somehow we live in, like, he lives in this 1950s American fantasy. Like, he, in his mind, we live in Goodfellas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in Pleasantville. Like, if in, so he's going to protect American jobs and all the jobs that, like, he sees in all these movies that he loves to watch. And that just isn't how the world works anymore.
Mm-mm.
Like, the steel industry in America didn't disappear because of immigrants or Chinese steel coming on, or it's because of technology.
Right.
Like, we've invested in better jobs, and people have moved, as they've moved out of the workforce, into new jobs that are more efficient and work better with how our society functions.
Better environments to work in.
Right.
Yeah. Innovation's the like, free trade is one of the greatest enablers of that innovation.
Yeah.
Because then they're like, well, yeah, we can have somebody else make it, and we can have better jobs.
Right.
Now. Like, and what's so wrong with that?
Yeah, the idea of the trade deficit is it's kind of confusing, but there's our Mercatus article.
Usually the protectionism is all about protecting a market that wouldn't survive on its own.
Right.
Without that protection, it wouldn't be there.
Right.
Which means that there's no place for it in the market.
Which isn't even real. Like, they don't need American protection. Like, the American steel industry is doing fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, it's, he just has this view of the world that is so 1980s, and it's because he lived in the world until 1980s.
And that's probably why he connects with so many boomers.
Well, yeah, because
they have the same worldview.
Because he ascended his treehouse when Trump Tower got built in the early 80s, and he surrounded himself with people who were yes men.
Yeah.
And so if you are suspended in time because of your wealth, and you live in 1983 perpetually, then, of course, like, Gung Ho is a documentary. Like, have you ever seen the Michael Keaton movie where the Japanese come in and they take over this automobile plant?
Mm.
Like, that's a documentary for him. It's the same with his foreign policy. Trump views foreign policy through John Wayne films. You know, like, the Green Berets and Tora, Tora, Tora are documentaries. That's how he thinks.
That's why people think he's racist sometimes, because he has such a simplistic view of their cultures and stuff.
Exactly, because he lives in white man 1980s. He grew up, he spent all of his formative years around mob lawyers, you know, and people who are very wealthy in New York at the time. So he is. He's just sort of a suspended in time individual and just doesn't know what he's doing. And, like, the idea of the trade deficit, this is titled, "Efforts to Reduce the Trade Deficit Will Have Unintended Negative Consequences." It doesn't say who this is by, but I'll have it in the show notes. U.S. trade deficit is driven by the investment savings gap. According to the National Income Accounting Identity, the difference between what the U.S. exports and imports in a given year must equal the difference. All right, let me slow down. Let me read this slower, okay? Because I had to read it like four times to get it. All right. According to the National Income Accounting Identity, the difference between what the United States exports and imports in a given year must equal the difference between national savings and national investment. Therefore, the United States runs a deficit on the current account year after year for one reason. Gross domestic investment in the economy exceeds gross domestic savings. If a nation's residents save more than the total amount that is invested in the domestic economy, net exports will be positive. That is, the nation's residents will export more than if they import. If the domestic investment exceeds domestic savings, net exports will be negative. That is, the nation's residents will import more than they export. Okay, so the...
So it's all based off savings.
It's based off savings and investment. And the fact that Americans don't save a lot...
We don't do that.
And we invest a lot into new businesses means we have a trade deficit. And we can run a trade deficit because we have a lot of investment, but it doesn't mean that we're necessarily getting ripped off by China. The U.S. current account has run an annual deficit for the past four decades for the basic reason that investment opportunities and the amount of investment in these opportunities has been consistently higher each year than the gross amount saved by Americans. The gap is filled by an annual net inflow of foreign capital, which mirrors and offsets the trade deficit. From 2010 to 2015, gross investment in the U.S. as a percentage of GDP averaged 19.4% of U.S. gross domestic product, while gross savings averaged 17.5%. So we have a thriving economy. We have the world's biggest economy, and people want to be a part of it. So that's why we have a trade deficit.
It's not a negative thing.
Yeah. And
deficit sounds negative.
And exactly. And so trying to solve it does produce negative consequences. And it's very similar to what Donald Trump is doing is very similar to what George Bush did with Iraq leading up to the Iraqi war. Only China's not Saddam Hussein. Dumb. This guy writes, Americans could try to badger another country into buying more U.S. exports, or it could block that country's imports with tariffs. Either action might shrink the bilateral deficit, but without a change in the underlying macroeconomic factors that determine the overall balance, such actions would simply reallocate the balance amongst Americans, others, amongst other trading partners. So what he's saying, in short, the Chinese will just sell their goods to other people. We will sell our goods to other people. And the two largest economies on the planet would not coordinate with each other. Doesn't seem to be a win-win for all of us.
It doesn't help the people.
It doesn't help any of us. Like, just because I have a, you know, it's unnecessarily provocative because he has this notion that just isn't true. The amount of technology that Americans have developed over the last 40 years has allowed us to become a much more prosperous country, and thus a lot more investment has taken place here. And conversely, we have seen an amazing amount of growth in our economy and workforce. But yes, there are some people in rural parts of my state, for instance, who are hurting financially. That white working class that everybody talks about that supposedly got them elected, the Roseannes of the world, yes, they were disproportionately affected in a transitional period. But it is, and I know this isn't any comfort to them, but it's like the buggy maker in 1910. Like, you're going to have to figure something else out. The economy, the free market changes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's no comfort to people. So demagogues and politicians want to try and create some comfort for those people and say, I've got your back, I will protect you. But it doesn't matter how many tariffs he puts on things, he's never going to fix those jobs. He's never going to bring back the automobile industry. You can bring, like, Mitch Daniels, through free trade, brought Honda to Greensburg, Indiana. And it revitalized southeastern Indiana, you know. And he did it through things like tax abatements. And, you know, libertarians quibble over that. But, you know, this was an area of the state that had nothing going on. You know, the farmer that I mentioned earlier in my family, as his farming business went down, he was able to go work for the new Toyota plant in Princeton. You know, now he works for the coal plant. And so there's these new industries. And so on paper, his farming job was destroyed, quote unquote.
Right.
But he adapted as his industry started to change. He adapted by going to work at new opportunities.
Yep.
So you have to sit and really look at this stuff and go, okay, is everybody, like, we have these caricatures in our head that, you know, of Flint, Michigan, and the auto industry fails, and, you know, Randy's just now he's on welfare smoking cigarettes. all of those people are probably in existence, like there are, you know, but it isn't the majority of people.
No.
You know, so you can't buy into these caricatures of people as fact.
Right.
So
there's way more to it than that.
Right.
It's not, yeah, economics isn't so simple.
Right.
it's an organic living thing. It's, you know, the Constitution isn't, but the economy is.
Right. So let's talk about Amazon next, because it kind of fits in here. It all fits in.
Yeah.
Donald Trump came out and has issued a bunch of tweets, and he's mentioned Amazon like 5 times, and he's destroyed like $500 million of their stock market cap because he's attacking them.
Yeah.
Why does he have a hard on for Amazon?
Oh, well, who owns Amazon?
Jeff Bezos.
Oh, what else does Jeff Bezos own besides Amazon? I wonder.
The Washington Post.
Oh, you already know.
All right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What newspaper released the grabber by the pussy tape?
Yeah. The Washington Post isn't best friends with Donald Trump.
In the Doug Jones, Roy Moore, Alabama race, Steve Bannon, every time he's the Jeff Bezos, Amazon.com, Washington Post, mm-hmm. you know, trying to like make them demons and defame them because he's trying to tie them to the nefarious left. Well, Steve Bannon was in the White House doing that, I'm sure. And, you know, he got a bum rap, he feels, from the fake news Washington Post. And he stupidly thinks that Jeff Bezos has anything to do with the editorial content of the Washington Post when he specifically says, I don't want to.
Yeah.
I know they lose money. I'm doing it as a public service.
He's a powerful figure.
If I were Jeff Bezos and I were the richest man in the world, I would do exactly what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I would buy a media outlet because I think it's cool and mm-hmm. I love the product, and then I'd leave it alone. So he doesn't like the Washington Post for political reasons,
right.
And he thinks incorrectly that Jeff Bezos has anything to do with it. He's busy running one of the greatest.
So he sees that now with his newfound power of being elected president, he can use that to get back at
it. Yeah, and I don't know where the article went, but like this isn't just the only company that he does this. He does this all the time to companies.
Right.
You know, every month or so, there's another company that he's beating up on. So
and for a while now, for the last few presidents, we've left, majority of them have left Silicon Valley alone. They've let them, you know, do their own thing. Actually, probably one of the least regulated industries in
easily.
America.
Yeah. That's why you've seen such great growth.
Right.
In both social, marketing, internet of things, mm-hmm. cellular technology. You've seen great, the places that you've seen in those sectors that you've seen the least growth are things like bandwidth and LTE, mm-hmm. things that are regulated by the government.
Yep.
Which was Ajit Pai's entire point with net neutrality is the government shouldn't be involved in this. Congress needs to write a law, not me.
And then here we are, the president of the United States saying, well, they don't pay enough taxes.
They don't,
they don't pay state and local taxes, but really they do.
They do.
In 45 states, they pay taxes.
We have, you know, Mitch Daniels, was it Mitch?
I pay taxes here for it.
I think it was Mitch that added Amazon had to start paying sales taxes because mm-hmm. retailers in Indiana said they have an unfair advantage not being taxed. And so they pay taxes.
It is an advantage.
I
wouldn't call it unfair. I'd say they have an unfair disadvantage that they are being taxed.
Right.
I would say it's the exact opposite, but
I agree with that.
It is an advantage. And that's why you've seen Amazon grow to owning Whole Foods and knocking Walmart off the top and everything. It's because those companies with the government on their backs like that, they can't compete with.
I'm looking at
a free market.
There isn't a piece of podcast equipment in this studio that wasn't bought on Amazon.
See,
including the tablecloth, the wall foam,
right?
The LED lights, the board, the recorder, the mics, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon. It's because it's cheaper prices. It's easier to use. And it's a company that I like and I want to support. So if you want to call in, Now's the chance to talk about Amazon. It's 317-699-7236.
So that not only did he say they don't pay enough taxes, he said that the post office is their little errand boy, their little delivery boy, and they're losing money every order from Amazon.
He said unironically that the post office Amazon treats the post office like their little delivery boy.
Like, that's what they do.
Literally what they do, dum-dum.
That's their job. And what kind of business does not want a giant corporation like that only coming to you? Why would you? What kind of business is like, we don't want that customer.
Right. So
we don't want those millions of dollars.
So this is from Vox. Vox is a left-leaning site, but always, I think, they have a lot of great context to the news. And that's why they're one of my first sites that I check every day. Trump thinks Amazon's destroying the postal office. Here's what's really happening. He's been obsessed with this for a long time. The other aspect to this is that, and it was said in Axios that really kind of got this scoop, the problem is that Donald Trump is talking to all of his friends who run brick-and-mortar stores, mm-hmm. including himself, you know, retailers, mm-hmm. who buy space in Trump hotels and Trump shopping malls, like in Chicago or whatever, and they're losing markets.
Because retail market's on the out.
Right.
We don't need as many retail stores as we used to.
Right.
You don't need a store for fishing poles and car parts and right. clothes and food. Now you just need a grocery store and Amazon.
Right. Exactly right.
Like, so yeah, that's part of the innovation that I don't think Trump can understand how the market works like that, how it's always changing and evolving.
But
he sees it as it's punishing someone, and we have to protect them.
He's just a great businessman, though. How could he not understand the free market?
Is he a great businessman?
See, I like where you're going. I like that you're getting to where I'm at, where I have been. Basically, Axios says that Trump is obsessed with the company, and he has accused Amazon of making the post office dumber and poorer. The question of whether or not the Postal Service is getting ripped off by Amazon is hard to calculate, because the deal between Amazon and the Post Office is technically secret.
Okay.
But they get a bulk shipping rate like any other person would.
And it was agreed upon by Amazon and the government.
Right. The Postal Service does lose billions of dollars a year and has for the past decade. That's not news. And it's likely that Amazon gets a good deal given it ships millions of boxes a year. So it's also hard to know how sweet the deal might become if those agreements are made public. They've even expanded into Sunday delivery. Like, the post office delivers.
Yeah, just for Amazon.
Just for Amazon.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
They had to shut it down for the public.
The Postal Service's financial woes are now well documented. In 2017, the Postal Service took a net loss of $2.7 billion. In November 2017... just that month, they took a net loss of $2.7 billion.
With a B?
With a B.
In one month?
That can't be right. There's no way. Magnified over the years, that figure represents a cumulative net loss of more than $63 billion since 2007. That is many billions of dollars. But break down the losses, and the situation is a bit more nuanced. Delivering packages, it turns out, is a growth business. And it actually makes the Postal Service money.
Who knew?
The revenue from the packages increased $2.1 billion and was up 11.8% for the fiscal year of 2017.
And they still lost all that money in November?
The problem is the revenue from first-class mail, still the biggest source of the USPS's revenue, is declining. The thing that really eats up the Postal Service's revenue, financial obligations to employees' health and retirement benefit programs. A 2006 law mandates that USPS pre-fund 75 years of retiree health benefits.
Wow.
So
I did not know that.
Yeah. In 2006, they had to...
75 years of pre-funding?
Pre-fund.
Who
75
does
years of retiree health benefits.
That makes no sense.
I'll tell you who does that. It is a civil service union of government employees that... are negotiating with essentially themselves for benefits and sweetheart deals. And so the postal workers union said, we know the Postal Service business model may be in trouble, so we need to get ours before you get yours. And we don't care what it costs. That's how they got that deal. So I thought that was funny that Trump is actually making fun of the thing that makes them money and is...
The only part of the business that's making money.
Right.
Is the part that he's complaining about.
Exactly right. Because he's an idiot.
That doesn't make any sense. There's just no way he's looked at those numbers, right? He's just speaking out of allegory.
Apparently, he is told these things, but he doesn't listen to them. Okay, I don't know if you've ever had a boss like this where, you know, and I have had in the past, where you're dealing with a boss where, like, you tell them something and, like, they just don't hear you because they think they're right.
Gotcha.
Like,
yes.
And I am not. I know the reputation of my current employer on the radio is one thing, but it's not that way in real life. Like, I just want to clarify. But, like, the reality is he's so stuck in his own stupid little petty world inside his mind, he doesn't hear when people tell him things. So you constantly, like, what you read in the Washington Post and Axios and Politico about what's going on, the New York Times with Maggie Haberman reporting, like...
He's like the typical person on Facebook.
He is. He's a boomer. He's the last, thank God, boomer president.
I didn't read anything that your post says, but I know it's wrong.
Exactly right. He is that guy to a T.
Yeah.
Peter Suderman had a great article today on Reason. Donald Trump's petty authoritarianism is driving his vendetta against Amazon. To serve his own insecurities, Trump is waging a bellicose war on Americans who work, buy, and invest. Over the last week, the president of the United States has tweeted no less than 5 attacks on Amazon and its owner, Jeff Bezos, who also owns the Washington Post. He called the Post a lobbyist for Amazon and arguing that the online retailer is exploiting the Postal Service and doing harm to American businesses. You have retailers all over the United States that are going out of business, Trump said Tuesday. If you look at the cost that we're subsidizing, we're giving a subsidy to Amazon. Which is not true. The biggest cost to Amazon is their shipping. So in his world, the American taxpayer is subsidizing the war on the businesses that his friends own. And his friends are talking to their powerful friend saying, can you help us?
Mm-hmm. We got you elected. Now scratch our backs.
The answer to the question of whether they receive a subsidy is no, not really. And even if Amazon's packages are priced in a way that is advantageous to the company, it is not exactly a subsidy for Amazon to ship packages through the mail at the price the mail service chooses to charge. Again, voluntary, like your murder capital.
So that would be all right with me.
Right. So a little more than a year into Trump's presidency, it is clear that he has no particular ideological outlook. He's not a hardline conservative or a secret New York liberal or even much of a true believing populist. Despite the presence of a rolling cast of advisors who might more accurately fit these labels. And it is true, like hardline conservatives like Bannon and John Kelly to some extent. The secret New York liberal is Jared Kushner, the true believing populist. I guess that's probably more Bannon. And hardline conservatives. Kelly is who he's referring to. Instead, Trump governs through muddled instinct, unconstrained by legal precedent or policy advice, always seeking attention, conflict, and personal dominance. Trump isn't an ideologue, but a petty authoritarian whose main pursuit is brutish self-aggrandizement. And while his authoritarian impulses have not been borne out in the worst fears of his critics, they're far from harmless. So they talk about how he attacks the Post, and then he cost them $50 billion.
They'll bounce back.
$50 billion in market cap.
I ain't worried about him.
Presidents rarely have as much control over the economy as they take credit for, but in this case, Trump appears to have directly impacted the fortune of both a specific American business that is responsible for tens of thousands of jobs, as well as the general performance of the stock market, all in serving of pursuing a pointless personal vendetta. And the people who are like, oh, on Vox, Matthew Iglesias, who, if his name is attached to anything, don't read it. He's a trash writer. He's a trash person. But he's like, oh, he's using the power of the presidency to destroy the value of a company. Amazon will be fine. In like 3 days, Amazon will have gained all that market cap back. Like they, it's the, how the market works. But that's the problem with people on the left. These commentators don't understand economics. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the free market. They don't understand, you know, even the volatility of the market. They just see like this silly little game of points being won and lost. So, yep.
How can I use the statistic to further my viewpoint?
Exactly
that I
right.
Believe in
100%.
That's all it is.
Right. Trump's simmering trade war with China, meanwhile, is another personal project that only makes a sense as a display of jungle dominance. Trade wars are good and easy to win, he said. This is a view shared essentially by no reputable expert on the subject. That free trade is broadly beneficial and trade wars harm the economy is one of the most widely held beliefs amongst economists. But that doesn't matter because Trump isn't really pursuing anything that resembles a policy agenda right. in the traditional sense. Instead, as with Bezos, Amazon, and the Post, he views China as a rival, but on a national scale, and rivals must always be dealt with via the performance of aggression. He will eventually lose this, he points out. The stock market took a dive yesterday as China and the U.S. announced tit-for-tat tariffs. China's response appears to deliberately target Trump's own voters. The price of everything from automobiles to beer is certainly to rise. Moody's Analytics yesterday projected that Trump's trade policies would cost 190,000 American jobs to serve his own insecurities.
But that's what he's all about is more jobs.
Right. That's exactly right. So he's given himself a lot of attention. But to the extent that anything Trump does is the pursuit of an intentional plan, this is by design. The goal of so many of Trump's actions is not to pursue a particular policy or ideological agenda or public good. It's to put himself at the center of the story, to bask in the spotlight, even if the glare is largely negative.
Wow.
Which is a great point, but like, what...
Is it that shallow, though?
Like,
that it's just
yes.
for self-promotion?
Yes.
It's not, it has nothing to do with anything he believes in?
Did you not listen to 2016 We Are Libertarians? Because I've been saying this the entire time.
You have.
I mean, this is who this guy is. Like, I know that everybody, and this is an important lesson for a lot of libertarians and you listeners, and you specifically, Galt, is that it is easy to get caught up in the middle of a presidential election with the fervor of what's going on, and I get into it, too, and you get lost in, like, the reality of it. And the reality is that this guy is a petulant child. He's a petty little baby. He's an authoritarian little baby. But he's so ineffective and incompetent that he's never going to actually be able to start a nuclear war because nobody's going to let that happen because they know he's such a baby. You know, it's like the guy who isn't this crazy and stupid. Like, if Donald Trump didn't have Twitter, he'd probably be more dangerous. But, like, the public kind of knows who he is because we see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he were like Nixon, where Nixon was this crazy behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm, but nobody knew.
But nobody knew. They were all like, Nixon's a good man.
Oh, yeah, that good Donald Trump guy.
And,
yeah, he never said a bad thing in his life.
You know, and Donald Trump is an authoritarian for 28% of the population. It is people who are dominate, like, so much of politics today is tribal, and it's dominated by racism. It's dominated by the intersectional politics of the left. How many points have you racked up on the diversity scale? How much do you support our cause? And have you ever had a deviation from our cause? Because if you have, you're out. We need to silence you.
Yeah.
Unless you are 100% on board with the groupthink of the left.
That's the main reason. That specific point is the main reason I got out of politics.
Yeah.
Is because it was, you had to follow a band.
Right.
All the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if there was something, you can't say that one thing you don't like with them.
Yeah.
You have to follow it.
Because people like Tommy Lauren will become famous.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ben Shapiro said, Tommy Lauren is what happens when Republicans don't read books.
Right.
You know, like, and everybody can see this girl is a dum-dum.
Yeah.
But she's cute and yells.
So we should watch her.
So we should watch her. Right.
Let's Somebody have her writes Fox. What she says. She doesn't right. write it, so.
You know, and on the right, not everybody, not nearly to the same degree as the left, because the left is, I generally just kind of find the stuff that comes out of the left, and that's a broad term, I know, to be shrill, and just as authoritarian as they say Donald Trump is. Maybe more, because Donald Trump at least is willing to listen and be persuaded to some degree. But Donald Trump, there is no doubt that Donald Trump's worldview, his version of American greatness, is white culture. It is American military might and the strength of the American economy. And he's going to protect those three things. And there is a large group of our country, 30% probably, that is on board with him. And what I mean by white culture is the worldview that, not the worldview of the left, where if you are white, you are bad, but the worldview that the world that I grew up in is the right one. And I'm unwilling to compromise on living in that world. So I'm sorry, I don't care if there's a female CEO. I want the best person for the job, and it's going to be a white man. You know, I think there are a lot of people on the right who are as dogged about making sure that they are protecting the white male as they are. It's as absurd as the Harvard search.
It sounds so absurd.
It is. We're judging people on the color of their skin, on the amount of melanin in them.
There's so much closed-mindedness.
It's so dumb. Harvard refuses to interview a white male for the presidency of Harvard. Like, that's just racism. Yeah. Like, you're a racist.
Yeah.
Like, don't talk to me about Donald Trump being a racist. If
you're
you support
not even
that,
gonna
you're
let
racist.
Some interview someone because of their color.
Because of their color.
Yeah.
Like, that's racism. Like, the left, as we celebrated the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's death yesterday, the drifting from his legacy is so clear, where he stood for fulfilling the promises of equality and justice that were promised to all at the founding of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that every single person, regardless of their color, has the ability to succeed in this country. Mm-hmm. Everybody should have an equal start. That was Martin Luther King's words. Was he an economic socialist? Yes. He wasn't very well versed in economics. Was he a philanderer? Yes. Okay. But that doesn't diminish the greatness of his message of equality and justice. You can be for those things and not agree that he was cheating on his wife, for instance. Like, it's just like you can say, I think Donald Trump's policies are good. I don't care if he banged a porn star. Like, it's amazing how people can't have, like, that cognitive dissonance. Like, I can't support Martin Luther King because he cheated on his wife, but I'm okay with Donald Trump cheating on his wife because we're all in the same tribe, and it's bizarre.
Double standard.
It's bizarre.
It's everywhere right now.
Right.
On so many issues.
Instead of saying, like, everybody's just a complex person, they fuck up.
Yeah.
Like,
that's one of the best memes is the two-button meme. Because you can, oh my gosh, you can use it for almost anything right now.
That's why I love memes, is because memes just like cut through the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's like George Carlin lives in memes. You know, like George Carlin would be simultaneously losing his mind and having a heyday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go back and watch some Carlin.
He would be more popular than ever right now, but he would also be hating it more than ever right now.
This motherfucker. Doesn't Rush Limbaugh look like the type of guy that likes to be peed on? Oh, man. I don't know where I was going. But, yeah, Donald Trump views 1980s, the world of the 70s and 80s, the time when he was the most... that's when he was formed. We all have there is a specific term that I cannot remember, but there is a psychological term for the period of 15 to like 30, 15 to like 25. And this is when you rack up all the memories that you love the most. And it is because you are coming of age and you are experiencing things for the first time. And so your brain loves novelty, and because you experienced those things for the first time, you love it the most. It gave you the biggest jolt of brain chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, falling in love for the 37th time isn't nearly as amazing as it was the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So he's romanticized that period of his life when he was starting out with a small loan of $1 million from
his
dad.
When he first felt that first success.
Right. And he was starting, like, women like me, I'm banging hot chicks, I'm going to the club 80.
It was the best time of his life. He doesn't want to lose it.
Easily. He was youthful. Like, think about all the values that Donald Trump, all the things he values. Image.
Yeah.
Physical
people
looks.
Didn't make fun of him.
Like he values yeah. youth, and he loves Hope Hicks because she looks good on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it stands to reason that the best version of Donald Trump in Donald Trump's mind is 29.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so he wants America to go back to that time when he was prospering because he was starting to become more successful, and he was prospering. So that must have been, what were the factors that made me prosper? Well, we had a strong steel industry, and this happened, and that happened. And all the people that I surrounded myself, the small group of people that I surrounded myself, they lost revenue because of things like Amazon and because of things like the decline of this industry and the changing of this. He's an old man who's afraid of change. Like, nobody just says that.
Right.
He's literally Hitler. No, he's an old, confused man who doesn't know how to work the remote, and the remote is the United States government. Like, he isn't a dangerous individual in that he is a dangerous person because he has authoritarian tendencies, but he's so old and confused that he's never going to be able to fulfill his destiny of becoming Putin.
Yeah.
But he loves Putin. He loves the fact that Xi just became the president of China for life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but he's never going to be that.
No.
Like, everybody needs to take a step back and just go, it's okay. Like, it's like, okay, like, Grandpa gets to drive 3 more years to the MCL because he loves it. It's like the danger of him crashing the car is getting higher, but it still doesn't, it's not worth taking away MCL. It means so much to him.
Yeah.
Like, that's where we're at with Donald Trump, okay? Like, it's...
So we just let him have his fun right. for the next 2 years.
Only the crashing of the car is nuclear war with China. Okay, other than that. But, yeah, I just think the hyperbole around Trump and the propaganda from both sides, but especially the left, they're so unhinged. And I find myself, like, I was more angry at Republicans when they were out of power. And I think it's because I just value truth. And I value, like, common sense, and I hate manipulation,
mm-hmm.
and I hate when people try to take things, like, so far that, and then everybody just, like, oh, you know. I mean, I remember when I first got involved in politics, and I first got into the Libertarian Party, I was sure I was going to be in a FEMA camp in 5 years, because Barack Obama was going to round us all up. There was a part of me that actually believed that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was irrational and stupid. But I was being manipulated, and I was letting myself be manipulated to be a part of a crowd. And I just see people doing that to both sides, and I go, you know what? I've been in this for so long that I hate seeing it happen to other people.
Yeah.
And, like, so the Republicans, when they were the minority, they were so ridiculous. The Democrats, the left right now, are so ridiculous.
Oh, man.
So...
It's bad.
It is. It's a shitty time. Like, you read some of these, like, this article in The Atlantic, and this guy's writing on the anniversary of Martin Luther King, and it's like, you can't believe you live in this world. Like, this is the, you know, the seas have risen. I wish I had printed it out, but it's just so negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not the world we're living in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see your reality. Like, why are you creating that reality? Because that's not it. So Donald Trump, like, he has this love of a world that doesn't exist anymore, and deep down is afraid of a changing world because he isn't going to have a significant place in it and isn't going to have any control in it in 10 to 15 years. You know, and he loves control. He loves being in control because he's a crazy person. You know, and
that's what I said. You know, before the show started, was most of these things that we keep hopping from over and over again. It's just the things he's obsessing about.
Yeah,
and it's one thing at a time, and they're very short lived because usually he wakes up or something.
Yeah, something else gets distracted.
2 day slur, and then he finds something else to get attached to.
Yeah,
but that's all it is. It's just over obsession over and over again.
So the might of the American military, like, mm-hmm. they're talking now about building bases. They're making plans to build 2 military bases in Syria, and they're talking about going to Congress. The Pentagon is talking about going to Congress for funding to rebuild Syria.
Great.
To basically nation build in
We've
Syria.
We've never done that before.
Right. I think I actually printed it out just in case we brought this up. And we'll talk about Kevin Williamson, too, if we get some time. Trump drops push for immediate withdrawal of troops from Syria. President Trump has instructed his military commanders to quickly wrap up the American military operation in Syria so that he can bring troops home within a few months, senior administration officials said on Wednesday. He dropped his insistence on an immediate withdrawal, they said, after commanders told him they needed time to complete their mission. The president's decision to keep the 2,000 troops on the ground in Syria for the immediate future came in a meeting with the National Security Council after he was convinced by a group of people, generals especially. Mm. They had drawn up, but then they were like, oh, we can't stay, we can't. How much do you think they're going to be leaving in a few months?
No.
There isn't a chance. They're buying time with a they're playing games with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted an immediate withrawal.
Yeah, the military industrial complex is not going to let that
happen. Never
going to
happen.
Nope. So they heard him say that, and then they had a meeting with him, and now he's not saying it anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's usually how those things go.
Yeah. so he believes that it is the job of the American military to keep America strong and secure. He believes in law and order. He believes all the things that Pat Robertson preached about in the 1984 presidential election. You know, but he's still, like, he is baby boomer incarnate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just believe in all these values, and I'm going to spout all these values all over the place, but I'm going to go fuck this porn star right after I talk about how it is important for other people to be Christians. Like,
yeah,
that's them. You know, we need to be a country that just really is a responsible country in the world right after we spend $20 trillion in debt. The reason that people talk about a tinge of racism with Trump is because it is America first, but like he doesn't treat Norwegians the way that he treats Mexicans. He doesn't treat the Chinese government the way he treats the Russian government. And I think it's because one's a Chinaman and the other one's a Russian.
That's the reason.
And I'm saying Chinaman because that's what he would say. Like, I genuinely think that there is a part of him that I don't think it's consciously racist. I think he just has grown up in a world where most of his life, the Chinese were commies.
Mm-hmm.
The Koreans were bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, you grew up in a very whitewashed world.
I see a lot of people, like, grandparent ages talk sometimes that's not acceptable today about things like that.
Right.
Commies or Japanese people.
Them Orientals.
Yeah, or black people.
Right.
And every time I hear it, I kind of just dismiss it and give them a pass. Like, I feel like it's just with how they grew up and the words they were taught and, you know, how people talked in school.
It's like Donald Trump hires gay.
It doesn't ever get to me.
Right. Like, Donald Trump doesn't hate gay people. He doesn't hate black people. He hires all these different ethnicities and groups of people. And I think one-on-one, he interacts with those people.
Fine.
And most baby boomers do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if you think about your grandparents, when they talk about the group of people, that's when they're racist.
Yeah.
They're not racist one-on-one.
Right.
You know,
you're right.
But like, it's because they grew up in a white culture. And like, we as millennials have grown up in a multi-ethnic culture where like, we understand that, yes, there is a white culture. There is a black culture. There's other cultures. And like, I'm just not going to know what it's like to be black, and I'm not going to try.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, right.
I'm not a Muslim. I can't understand what it's like to be
one. I love rap music. It doesn't mean I belong in the Casbah at 2 a.m. on a Friday night, even though I've tried.
You tried.
I've tried. But so, I don't know. And I don't know if I'm making sense, but I just, like, I see it, like, in the scapegoating of how the world has gone to a hell in a handbasket. We've got to put tariffs on the Chinese good because them Chinese have destroyed our jobs.
Yeah.
It's the same paranoia as the Japanese in the 80s.
And it's both sides doing those generalizations, too.
Right. Of course.
It's like, it's those white men shooting schools and...
yeah. Have you heard about Kevin Williamson? Do you know who that is?
Mm-mm.
So Kevin Williamson is apparently, like, a great writer. I've read him several dozen times over the years. I just didn't know it was him. And he wrote for the National Review, and he got hired by The Atlantic, which The Atlantic is a great publication. The Atlantic Interview is a really good podcast, too, with Jeffrey Goldberg. And so Jeffrey Goldberg is the editor of The Atlantic, and he wants to have a broad, diverse set of opinions on his paper, on his magazine, on his website.
Mm-hmm.
And The Atlantic is one of the best news sites. I go to it every day. Like, they have a libertarian-leaning writer named Connor Friesendorf, who I think is one of the most interesting writers in the country. Like, the dude just always, every day he just writes something like, I never saw it that way. Huh. Like, I think he's great. And so they hired Kevin Williamson, who is a traditional conservative Republican from the National Review. Apparently a great writer. He just wrote the article that you probably saw on Facebook, The Libertarian Moment is Over, essentially. I didn't cover it because I thought it was nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, reading it, it was just like, anytime a mainstream magazine writer writes about the libertarian movement, the entire libertarian movement is Ron or Rand Paul.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. And so, like, because Rand Paul is flailing in the wind like his dad, the libertarian moment is over.
But I don't even think he is.
He isn't.
He's made more strides than anybody else.
Way more. Yeah. Way more than Ron.
Yeah. I mean he's made Donald Trump change his mind on some things.
Yeah. Ron
that's more than you can say about any other.
Ron wasn't taken seriously by his colleagues.
Right.
Rand Paul sets agendas.
Yeah.
So I think he's been more successful
in
governing. Yeah. So he wrote The Death of the Libertarian Movement. That was the only column that he got out. This is by Catherine Mangu Ward on Reason. By firing Kevin Williamson, The Atlantic shows it can't handle real ideological diversity. But the thing that cost him the gig was a remark he said on a podcast, which is why I will never be hired by The Atlantic or anyone.
Oh, no.
And someone challenged me on my views on abortion, he said. If you really thought about it, it's a crime. You would support things like life in prison, no parole, for treating it as a homicide. And I do support that. In fact, as I wrote, what I had in mind was a hanging. And
hanging people that have abortions?
Yeah. Williamson expressed the view that abortion is murder and should be punishable to the full extent of the law, although he also later indicated that he has mixed feelings about capital punishment. I do not share his view, but by declaring Williamson to be outside the Overton window of acceptable political discourse because he believes strongly that abortion is a serious punishable crime, The Atlantic is essentially declaring that it cannot stomach real mainstream conservatism that actually exists in the 21st century. He uses colorful and rash language. He didn't have to detail the grisly form of punishment he would inflict on women who decide to terminate their pregnancies. He chose to do so because he enjoys provoking a reaction. But The Atlantic knew that before they hired him. Editor Jeffrey Goldberg says he decided to fire Williamson only after learning that the tweet and podcast quote represented his carefully considered views. But the underlying logic of Williamson's position is a view shared by roughly half or at least 40% of Americans. It is, of course, the perfect right of The Atlantic's editors to publish whomever they wish. Reason staffers are all libertarian under a big tent understanding of that term. That's written into our mission as a magazine. But if The Atlantic purports to capture a broad spectrum of American political views, Williamson's firing is a sign that it hasn't yet figured out how to do so. And guess who really organized and pushed the Williamson firing?
Oh, no. Who did it?
Who collected all of this information, who found this particular piece of information on the podcast, who pushed it out to all of their friends in the media, who pressured Jeffrey Goldberg to fire him. If you were to guess who that organization would be, who is it?
I don't know. George Soros.
No, close. The Left Thought Police, Media Matters.
Media Matters.
Yes.
Should have guessed it.
As we spoke
about. I
should
have guessed that.
Yes. So that is ground zero.
Doesn't surprise me.
For thought control.
Oh, yeah.
It's not good because the siloing of the traditional conservative viewpoint into only Commentary Magazine, only Human Events, only National Review, and the writers are only moving between those groups, never going into the New York Times, never going into the Atlantic, and never having the coastal audiences that read those magazines, having them exposed to 40% of America. It's not good for the country.
Oh, yeah. You're further and further delving more people into those small groups.
Right.
Or those large thought groups that dictate everything they even think nowadays.
Right. And these echo chambers have consequences, because what you get is you get the baby boomer president mm-hmm. who just, you know, well, it's because the Chinese stole all of our jobs and we need to put tariffs on them. You know, it's because of Amazon and technology and they don't pay enough taxes, so we need to punish them and slow technology down. It's because the Mexicans keep coming and stealing our jobs. So Donald Trump has announced that he is sending the military to the southwest border to guard against growing threats from unchecked immigration.
There we go.
We are going to be guarding our border with our military. It's a big step.
Good.
So he is going to be asking the governors on southern borders to send the National Guard to the border. Now, it's not a big step. It's the exact same thing that Barack Obama and mm-hmm. George W. Bush did. Did you know what? That Barack Obama sent National Guard troops to the border?
No.
It's amazing how that didn't get reported.
Wasn't a big deal.
Huh? Right.
It's kind of like the job of the president.
Right.
But now that Trump's done it, it'll be played over and over again, and it'll be demonized.
Right. So in 2006, President George W. Bush announces plans to deploy 6,000 troops.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Jumpstart.
I remember that one.
Happened from June 2006 to July 2008. It cost $1.2 billion. Troops were deployed to California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. Assists with undocumented immigrant apprehensions, 186,814 people. 11.7% of the total apprehensions on the southwest land border. So they basically helped catch 12% of the people sneaking over. They helped seize 316,000 pounds of marijuana. No. Chris, stop crying. Stop crying. It's okay.
All that marijuana.
You're upset, aren't you? I can tell. That's 9% of all the marijuana seized on the southwest border. Now, again, in 2010, President Obama orders the deployment of 1,200 troops, Operation Phalanx. It happened for a year, basically, from 2010 to 2011. It cost $110 million. The troops were scaled back for aerial surveillance, and I don't know why I can't say that word. And then 17,000 people were caught in the first month, 5%. And 56,000 pounds of marijuana, 2.6% of weed caught.
Wow.
So
Bush is a lot more efficient.
Well, I mean, you're talking about...
It was less money and he got 12%, right?
A 2-year period with 6,000 troops versus 1 year. But, you know, that 2 years, 12% of the people caught at a cost of $1.2 billion, it's not worth it.
Oh, but no, that was successful. That's what they're going to tell you.
Right.
That was very successful. We should do that again next president.
Oh, gee. Please stop bringing all this marijuana in. Please stop bringing all this employment. Like, here's the thing about I posted up on WALpolitics.com and WeAreLibertarians.com different videos on different sites. So you'll have to give me 2 clicks. They're also in the show notes for this episode, some YouTube videos from some various professors. And Quartz had a great video where basically, you know, do illegal immigrants cost Americans jobs? No. Because if you look at the pie chart, if you look at the bar graph, essentially it looks like a reverse snow hill. You know, it looks like a Hitler salute, like this way,
mm-hmm.
you know, where where it's going up.
Right.
From
it's growth.
From 1950 up to 2020 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's women in the workforce. And the amount of job opportunities went up and unemployment went down.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at an all-time high of women in the workforce
mm-hmm.
and unemployment's 3%, 4%.
But they're stealing our jobs.
But let me ask you, Galt. It doesn't make sense because... Do Mexicans have some sort of superpower that will steal a job that a woman like won't be able to? Like, do women have the magical
power?
They got
those calloused hands, man.
Because I'm just thinking...
They can handle their wood.
I'm just thinking that, like, if you have one body come in and that increase... And it, like, you'd think maybe it's just, maybe I'm crazy. Like, I'm just not using the right math.
So what, there should be more Mexican seamstresses?
I'm just thinking that, like, more labor must create new job opportunities.
Right.
Like, the extra supply increases demand, especially in a country with a lot of innovation.
Really?
But it can't be true, because the more women that have been working, the less unemployment and the more job opportunities. Like, the more women trying to work, there should be higher unemployment because they're stealing men's jobs.
Right.
I'm confused. I mean, I just don't get it. I just, like, the charts, the economists must be wrong, because
they are.
Every time a Mexican comes over
the
border, or an El Salvadoran comes
then
over,
then we lose a job.
Then we're losing a job. Yeah. But, like, if a woman starts working, we're not.
Yeah, we're an African American.
Because they're white. I mean, well, Americans.
Yeah.
So it is. It's so, like, again, if you look at the conversation around illegal immigration, the supply of labor, yes, they are doing jobs Americans don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But then the next generation goes on to work for Apple. You know, like, the next generation of kids. America is, it's just, Donald Trump has just a very pessimistic worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, like, the closed border argument to be the same as, like, the tariff argument. That if we just tax this hard enough, then
it's culture protection.
It's cultural protection is exactly what it is. Like, closed borders are the same things as tariffs. Mm-hmm. And so if you're for tariffs, you're probably for closed borders. That makes sense to me. Because you think you can use the force of government to stop growth. To stop the free market.
Right.
Well, you can't.
No.
So people are going to come to America, whether it's legal or not, because there's economic opportunity here. And the more people that come here, the more jobs we will find for them.
Yeah. They're afraid that they see things like the smaller countries in Europe that, you know, have been overtaken by different religions that weren't already there.
You mean like Luxembourg, which has like 2 million people and is the size of Dayton, Ohio? Like, yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Like, the left tries to make this comparison with the gun arguments.
Yeah.
And the industrialized world and the first world, like, we're the only ones who do this. Switzerland has 20 million people. Stop. It's not the same thing. We have 330 Americans.
But gun bans work in Australia.
Right. You mean, well, they have like 40 million people.
Country. That's surrounded by water. No other, well, there's one other country, but
and so
does New Zealand have strict gun laws?
I believe so.
So it's the whole continent.
I don't know, but that's maybe I shouldn't say this, but that's where I'm fleeing Matt Drudge style, like
to New Zealand.
Yeah, if you don't hear from me, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, that's where Ben Swan went.
Is that where he's at?
No, he's on YouTube now.
he lives on YouTube.
Tilly's does a video about guns.
Listen, I'm telling
him off.
I've never really watched much Ben Swan, but I'm just gonna go ahead and tell you, Ben, like, setting up camp in YouTube. If you're gonna move to YouTube,
he's using some kind of other YouTube platform too. Like
PewTube.
We might as well call it Google Plus QTube.
Don't ask how. But I just ended up on Chris Cantwell's website last night.
What?
I was going through old bookmarks.
And you had his website bookmarked?
Oh, yeah. Because I used to go read it just because I just wanted to see what he was saying. Because here's the thing about Cantwell. He was a libertarian for a long time.
Yeah.
But he was always considered like a fringe nut job libertarian.
Yeah. I used to follow him, too.
Right. And so I'd go and check and see what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And he's on Gab TV and PewTube.
PewTube.
PewTube. I had never seen that one before.
I can't remember what Ben's is called, but I'd never heard of it either. And I went on there, and it was loading so slow that I was like, I'm going back to YouTube to watch him.
Right. Well, that's the problem. Like, when I talk to the guys at Minds.com, like, he's like, yeah, we do video, but we can only do 15 minutes because it's, like, so much of our cost.
No one can compete with Google's bandwidth.
Yeah. That's why
you can't compete with those companies, really. And their server space is massive.
I know. It's sort of an absurd argument. It's like, well, it's the free market. It's like, no, these companies have used the government to gain a huge advantage, and they're about to double down. Like, it's not the free market. They're crony capitalists like everybody else. But I love my phone. Apple would never be a crony capitalist. Oh, yeah. Okay, right. Yeah. They're sucking Barack Obama's.
What did they do to your phone that's 2 years old? They updated it and made the battery worse?
Right.
What?
Oh, but
to make you
Apple.
Buy new phones? That's not crony.
Yeah, like, where's... I threw it over here. Can you find the Google article? Do you see it?
No.
It's probably, like, right here. This is my... I'm keeping a story log, but... So Google basically, the new head of Google.
Yep.
Google, now this is Galt, you know, you're a big Google person. I know you love Google. Google employees protest work for the Pentagon. Thousands of Google employees, including dozens of senior engineers, have signed a letter protesting the company's involvement in a Pentagon program that uses artificial intelligence to interpret video imagery and could be used to improve the targeting of drone strikes. The letter, which is circulating inside Google and has garnered 3,100 signatures, reflects a culture clash between Silicon Valley and the federal government that is likely to intensify as cutting-edge artificial intelligence is increasingly employed for military purposes. We believe that Google, should not be in the business of war, says the letter, addressed to Sundar Pichai, the company's chief executive.
Yep.
It asks that Google pull out of Project Maven, a Pentagon pilot program, and announce a policy that will not ever build warfare technology. That kind of idealistic stance, while certainly not shared by all Google employees, comes naturally to a company whose motto is, don't be evil. So, essentially, they are...
And do you see why I love them?
Oh, yeah, I just love how they make...
Their motto is literally, be good. Be good all the time. Be a good company.
Yeah.
And, in this evil world of evil companies, be the good guys.
And Donald Trump's making America great again.
Oh, come on. Don't compare Google to Donald Trump.
Branding slogans don't mean anything. It's written by some 23-year-old twerp in an ad agency in a branding office somewhere.
Okay. How many people signed this petition?
3,100 people.
3,100. How many employees are there total?
I don't know. How many?
I don't know. I was asking.
No, you're like the Google. It might say in the article, but I didn't
see
that.
Well, that's a lot. 3,100 people.
Well, and now that it's on the front page of the New York Times, I'm sure more will sign it, but...
There were 1,200 people at just the YouTube headquarters.
So, here's the quandary, okay? I think if you're Sundar and you're asked to serve your country, and you're saying, listen, we're doing drones, and drones save lives because we're not putting boots on the ground, and... You know, we have a problem where we kill innocent families at weddings and we inappropriately bomb and kill American civilians without due process. And so we've got a real problem with this drones thing, as best outlined in Scott Horton's book, The Lords of Secrecy, Sundar. Can you help us make it more accurate so less people die? That sounds like a great way to serve my country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, so I can see from his perspective how that would be an attractive thing. But I certainly get not wanting to work for a company that is involved in warfare.
Well, but he's going to look at this and he's going to say, if I don't do it, somebody else is going to do it.
Sure.
Do you want, you know, Apple running AI for the government or do you want Google doing it?
Right.
You don't want Apple doing it. Apple's motto isn't be good. Apple's motto is...
Yes.
Be bad.
Yes.
Scam your customers out of money and take
actively
it.
Banning people based on.
So
Apple isn't the one censoring us on YouTube.
Because Apple doesn't own YouTube and they never could. That's why.
No, the richest company on the planet could never.
Oh, richest
that.
Company on the planet. You sound like Trump now making your alternative facts.
Are they not?
No, they're not the richest
they have the
company
most
on the
cash on hand.
I've never heard that.
Well,
Apple has more cash on hand than any company in the world.
Richest. Company in the world, 2018. The world's top 25 companies, according to Forbes. Yeah, don't get caught being evil is their new motto. number one, China IBC.
See? It's a company you've never even heard of.
Never even heard of it. Doesn't self-service banking, so it's a bank.
See? A bank is the largest company in the world.
China Construction Bank, number two.
Oh, number two is the largest bank. Another bank.
J.P. Morgan Chase.
Oh, another bank.
Yeah, imagine this. I feel like you're getting General Electric's number four.
Oh, not a bank.
No, they're a bank.
Oh.
GE Capital. Exxon Mobil.
They're not a bank.
HSBC. Number six.
That's oil.
Shell. Oil.
Mm-hmm. So oil and banking run the world.
Bank of China. Yeah, so a lot of banks. Where's... Berkshire Hathaway. All right, we got an American there.
So I watched an interview of Elon Musk once, and they were like, oh, you know, AI's coming. You know, what do you think about AI? And he was like, yeah, well, you know, there's infinite possibilities of our future. And, you know, Elon, he's boring to listen to. But if you listen to him, he's like, there's only one company I'm afraid of. And they were like, is it Amazon? And he was like, Amazon who? He was like, laughed at him. And then they were like, well, is it Apple? And he was like, no. And then they were like, well, is it Google? And he's like, you know what? I'm just not going to answer. So like when they, you know that he was talking about Google.
Right.
That's why we were talking about the Amazon thing earlier. And that's why it's hard to decide winners and losers in these things with the government, is because Amazon has an ongoing, a pending deal with the Pentagon for cloud services and backup.
Right.
Like, they're trying to get the Pentagon to use the Amazon cloud as their backup storage.
Yeah, but it's not the whole Pentagon.
It's a pretty big deal, though.
But it's not the whole Pentagon.
Valuable-wise, it's bigger than...
It was a project that the Pentagon had. It wasn't the whole Pentagon.
It was still a big deal.
But, I mean, 43% of the internet is run by Amazon Web Services.
Right.
So it's incredibly powerful, but also Google plays a huge role in directing thought control. I mean, it is a company that you see the internet through Google's eyes.
Huh. They have some very, very beautiful eyes. Colorful.
I mean, I'm not a person who's like, I prefer Apple products, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not one of these people who's like, I'm not a fanboy like you. You know what I mean? Like, all these companies, to me, I think have tremendous benefit to humanity.
No, but Apple has zero.
Anytime you have anything that is that significant, like these companies are, there's serious risks with it.
Yeah.
You know, Zuckerberg coming out and saying that every single person on their platform probably has been compromised. Like, here's the thing about this Cambridge Analytica scandal. You never see in any of these reports, in any of these articles, what is the information that got taken? What is the information they scraped? Have you seen that anywhere?
Nope. Was it my password? Was it my phone number? Was it my email? Just my name and my birthday?
That I liked.
Was it my pictures?
My likes? They never say that because they don't want you to be fully informed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a propaganda campaign to hurt their competitor that's unregulated.
Right.
Like, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it is.
I feel like we've done a lot here. Three episodes this week. And I've got an interview on Sunday.
Bad Trump.
With somebody.
Bad Trump.
So how are you feeling about Trump?
Come back. Go back to last year, Trump.
Right. It's only going to get worse, you know.
Oh, don't say that.
Because the Republicans are going to lose the House big in November, and they're probably going to lose... if they lose the Senate, then they're idiots. Because there's like 18 seats, and 12 of them are Republican favorable. And like, if they lost the Senate...
If I don't want to see the Democrats in control of Congress while Trump is president.
Because he will just give them whatever
he
wants.
I'm really nervous about him.
Because he's a people pleaser.
Yeah, he's not going to not get anything done for 2 years while they have control. He's gonna make deals with them.
He's literally like peace. He's like an Orwellian, like he's the opposite of what he presents. He's not strength. Yeah. He's not a great deal maker. He's terrible at deals. He's completely inconsistent. He's undermined by his own people all the time. Like, he's not a strong man. Like, he's a fairly weak man. You know, well, we need to elect Trump because he's strong. What's he strong at? Like, at this point, there's nothing that he's strong at except bullshit.
Well, as a libertarian, I always make sure I watch all the libertarians that have any kind of power. And Rand's only power has been that only leverage has been that he's the swing vote.
Yeah.
So if the Dems take over the Senate, look to never see him again.
Trump had...
He won't get any FaceTime with Trump anymore or anything.
As Jonah Goldberg said, Trump had two mandates. Don't be Hillary Clinton and Supreme Court justices. And like, that to me has been like that signifies kind of exactly like Trump, the way that all these people in the swamp look at Trump is that he's controllable because he's kind of a fool.
Mm-hmm.
but he's at least better than Hillary Clinton, who's dangerous.
Yeah, he's controllable, but the minute he finds out you're controlling him, you're fired.
Right.
You're fired.
Yeah.
He doesn't like it.
Yeah,
like, he just doesn't notice.
He's the most powerful people in the world are Fox News. Steve Doocy is basically the most powerful person in the country. Steve fucking Doocy. So, all right, guys, this has been a great episode. Thank you to Chris Galt for being here.
Yeah, anytime,
Chris.
I love it here.
Your final thoughts.
Let's just hope it doesn't turn into you know, our next show together isn't Batter Trump or Worse Trump or something.
Well, this episode we're going to talk
good
about
Trump. Let's do good Trump next
the
time.
The gun confiscation that, no.
That's the cool thing about this show, though. You never know what's going to happen next week.
I know.
It could be a great show. It could be a downer show. It just all depends on what, we what might, they decide they're going to do.
We might talk 9/11 in the comedy club. You never know. I look back and I go, like,
yeah, that was
our 200th episode, and we talked 9/11 at a comedy club because our plans kind of fell through. And, like, it didn't really hit me. But then at one point, Greg just goes, did we just do 9/11 in a comedy club?
It's not too soon anymore,
which,
right?
which was Greg's subtle way of saying, what are you doing? All right. Thanks for joining us. Thank you to Christy Avery. Thank you to Brandon Luke. Thank you to Craig DaCosta. Thank you to Jason Doolittle. Mittens is here by the microphone. She wants to give a special big thank you to Jason Doolittle, who sent cat Go-Gurt to the girls. I got an Amazon package.
Wow.
And it was like, it's like these little tubes of, basically looks like cat yogurt. It smells horrendous.
They love it, though.
They lost their minds. So Mitten says thank you.
That's great.
They love getting treats. So thank you for joining us. They are $100 subscribers. They make the world go round. Thank you for joining us as well. Thank you for listening. I would love, as the weather starts to get nicer, if you would do me a favor. Many more of your friends are going to be out mowing the lawn. We see the numbers tick up in the summertime because you're all downloading more podcasts because you're outside more. So please share this with your friends. Say, listen, they talk about politics, but they're not Sean Hannity. They're not, you know, I try hard not to be Tommy Lauren. I try hard not to be just a shrill partisan. Try to give you a fair and balanced look at everything that's going on. Try to give you the facts so you, that thing that you might have heard about a little bit on Facebook and you're wondering what's going on, like Donald Trump is bashing Amazon. I don't have time to figure out that. You spend 4 hours a week with us, you're going to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So please, I think we've got a great show here and it's only going to get better. So thank you. Thank you. And support us on Patreon. WeAreLibertarians.com. You can find out everything you need to know.
Now you know the death penalty is only for the murderous drug dealers.
Right.
Not the regular drug dealers.
And Chris Galt supports AAA killing you. That's one of my favorite segments in a while. So you're like, so it's okay if AAA kills you, as long as you sign a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Okay. And listen, I'm for euthanasia. Like, I think if you want to go, it's your time to go.
Can I ask for help?
There's too many,
I can have somebody help me?
There's too many people on this
planet. Oh, man, it's so hard to get it done nowadays.
I know.
Can't get help.
That Malthus was really onto something right. There's too many people around. all right, guys, thank you. We will see you next week. Who knows? I could sit here and I can kind of tell you on the Tuesday show what we're going to talk about Thursday because I had an idea. I already had the show notes all together for this episode. But I can't even begin to tell you what we're going to talk about Tuesday. Because Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Oh, man. If you planned Tuesday. It now, you'd have to change the whole thing
the
in
whole
2 days.
The whole thing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for watching, and we will see you next week.